Welcome to Narratives. Emma Skye's riveting true account of her involvement in the attempt to rebuild Iraq after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein has you weeping for the blindness of government bureaucracy and cheering for her bravery and steadfastness to her peaceful principles.
It was a chilly morning. I got off the number 87 bus at the Houses of Parliament and walked past Westminster Abbey, turning left down Great Smith Street. I was dressed in a suit for the first time in years. I had an appointment to appear before the Iraq inquiry. It was not a war crimes tribunal. No official in the UK or US would ever be held accountable for the decision to go to war in 2003, or the way in which the post-war phase was implemented. But it was an investigation into what had happened in order to draw lessons for the future. Hundreds of officials had already given their testimony since the inquiry was established in mid-2009. Now it was my turn. I entered a nondescript building. An official appeared, handed me a badge, and showed me to the room. I was introduced to the commissioners. Sir John Chilcot, a career diplomat and senior civil servant who chaired the inquiry. Baroness Usha Prasher, a member of the House of Lords. Sir Roderick Lyne, a former ambassador, and two historians, Sir Lawrence Freedman and Sir Martin Gilbert. I took my seat on one side of the table, facing my interrogators. I felt slightly apprehensive, but I kept telling myself that nothing could faze me after my Iraq experience. No one was going to die. Baroness Prasher. Can we start with some background information first? Can you describe how you were recruited to work for the Coalition Provisional Authority? Me. There was an email that was sent around the civil service asking for people to volunteer to go and work for the CPA. It was going to be Brits and Americans administering the country. I wasn't in the civil service, I was in the British Council. The email was forwarded to me. I expressed interest and became a secondee to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and then on to the CPA. Baroness Prasher. And what briefing were you given before you went to Iraq? Me. I wasn't given a briefing. It was a phone call. It basically said, you know, you've spent a lot of time in the Middle East. You'll be fine. Turn up at RAF Brize Norton. As soon as you get to Basra, there'll be somebody to meet you. They'll be standing there with a sign with your name on it, and you'll be taken to the nearest hotel. Baroness Prasher. But apart from a phone call, were you given any information about the Security Council Resolution 1483 and its implications for serving in the CPA? Me. I don't recall receiving any. Baroness Prasher. It would be helpful if you could just describe what your role and responsibilities were during your period at the CPA. Me. The CPA looked at the country as 15 provinces plus Kurdistan. So in each of the 15 provinces, they had a senior civilian who was known as the government coordinator and assumed the role a governor would play, responsible for the administration of the province, working with the US military, working with Iraqis, finding local leaders, working out who could take what responsibilities, building up their capacity to govern the province themselves. Baroness Prasher. And what were your specific responsibilities? What were you tasked to do? Me. There was no job description. We weren't given outlines of what our jobs were. I don't recall receiving an outline of what my job was until maybe September. So up until then, it was really how I interpreted what my role should be. Sir Roderick Lyne. I just wonder if I can come back to the beginning of this conversation, just to make sure I've really understood it. When you went out there, you say you had no written briefing, no terms of reference, no instructions, and you did not have any oral briefing from anybody other than to turn up at Brize Norton and fly out to Basra. Me. No. Sir Roderick Lyne. Nothing at all. Me. No. Not before I left the UK. I don't recall any at all except the one phone call. When I got to Basra, obviously there was no one there with a sign with my name on it, nor a hotel. So I went on to Baghdad. I made my way to the palace, and there I met the British team. I spent a week going around the palace, seeing how things worked, getting as many briefings as I could. They said, we have enough people here. We don't have enough people in the north, go north. So went to Mosul, they said we've got someone here. I went to Erbil, they said we've got someone here, but we haven't got anyone in Kirkuk. So I went to Kirkuk. I didn't know I was going to Kirkuk when I left the UK. Sir Roderick Lyne. So when you left the UK, you didn't know where you were going. You presumably didn't even know what kind of clothes to put in your suitcase. Me. Well, no, I was only going for 3 months. 3 hours after it had begun, the interrogation wound to a close. I looked towards Sir John Chilcot, hoping for some words of reassurance, willing him to recognize that despite the impossible challenge, I had tried my hardest in very difficult circumstances. Judging from Sir John's face, he was reeling from what I had told him. I had been opposed to the war and naturally suspicious of the military. Yet I had volunteered for 3 months to help get Iraq back on its feet, and within weeks of the fall of Saddam, I had found myself governing a province. By the time I left Iraq many years later, I had served as the political advisor to American generals through the surge and the drawdown of US troops. A British woman advising the top leadership of the US military, I suppose it must have seemed an unlikely story.
You've been listening to Emma Skye reading from her book, The Unraveling: High Hopes and Missed Opportunities in Iraq. Narratives is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Canvas Bay FM 99.9.